Hey, this is Bob Enyar. I know it's Monday. I know we don't do science shows on Monday. We do them on Friday. But this Real Science Radio show, you're going to want to hear, and it's time sensitive, so let's go right to it.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyar. Fred Williams is on assignment. You know that we have a video called Jurassic. It's about dinosaur soft tissue, Trey Smith and Bob Enyar. Well, if you haven't seen it, you don't know that it opens with a clip from Dave Nutting, who is an extraordinary creation scientist. And it's a clip up in the Rocky Mountains. And it's just a beautiful environment, and he's talking about dinosaurs. And so what an honor to have in studio of Alpha Omega Institute, Dave Nutting. Dave, welcome to Real Science Radio.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
You have been in this fight for many years.
Oh, yes.
And so I have questions as though you're sitting around a campfire up in the mountains with adults, young people, at maybe one of your rock and river adventures. And you're discussing how to respond to the challenges of evolutionists. So yeah. Could I ask you one?
Sure.
Well, Richard Dawkins has talked about us being poorly designed, and he suggests that we should be choking a lot because how badly, if there's a God, how badly he designed how we drink and eat and breathe. Could you address that?
I can. Actually, he talks about the fact, well, you could choke to death. Mm-hmm. That means that this God of yours has designed something that's very poor. You swallow and you breathe with the same tube.
Yes.
And in fact, he even states it more strongly. He says this design would be the height of stupidity.
The height of stupidity.
Yeah. And that's so arrogant to say that.
Oh.
But I always like to ask, and you might ask your listeners as well, how many of you have choked to death this morning?
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's working pretty well.
Billions of people in the world, we have thrived for thousands of years since God made Adam and Eve, put them in the Garden of Eden.
Exactly. So many different features within the body, for sure. And whether you're looking at the swallowing tube versus in breathing at the same time, why would God even do it that way?
Yeah.
And it turns out it's really good to have that bulk of air behind you to be able to cough up a piece of food that gets caught in your throat.
Oh, my.
So it works well that way. It allows speech to be possible, too. Essentially,
and it teaches you don't talk with your mouth full, as my mother taught
me. You know, that's where we have problems is when we misuse that.
Right, exactly.
But your teeth, your tongue, the air coming through, all of this is extremely necessary for speech. We wouldn't be talking on the radio if it wasn't designed that particular way.
What's interesting is that there are design trade-offs that evolutionists pretend don't exist. Like, we could have the eyesight of an eagle or a falcon, but we would need to then God would have had to dedicate a much bigger part of our brain toward our visual acuity. Instead, we're able to build schools where we learn about birds and their eyesight, and they're not able to.
That's exactly right. So we see that. Yeah, Richard Dawkins' arguments frequently are arrogant, and realizing I can design it better. But the problem is when you even look at the eye, which he says is poorly designed, actually, if you were to go outside on a bright, sunny day with the eye designed like Richard Dawkins says it ought to be designed, you would be blind in 2 hours.
Well, how does he say it should be designed? Help us understand. Because the human eye, researchers have shown rather easily that our eye responds to a single photon. A single photon, that's the smallest quanta of light you're going to have, and we can see one photon.
Yeah, that is absolutely amazing. He says we could see further and also better in a dimly lit room if this mass material that's kind of right in the line of vision was moved over to the side like it is in a squid's eye. So that's what he's saying. The problem is, that little mass of material is the best pair of sunglasses you can possibly own. It's a UV protector, etc.
Wow.
Where a squid is designed the other way, and it has to be. And the reason it has to be is because a squid lives in the dark. It needs every bit of light it can possibly get.
Oh, wow. So a squid typically doesn't accidentally glance at the sun as we do living on the surface. And you know how when somebody takes a flash photo, for a second, you can't see well. And your blood supply is refurbishing all those photosensitive cells that in that instant were damaged because of how bright the light was.
That's right.
Well, and so we get our sight back usually within seconds.
Mm-hmm.
If the eye was wired the other way around, how Richard Dawkins wants it to be wired, it might take an hour for your sight to come back. And so God designed a squid's eye differently, as you said, because of his environment.
That's right. And if you take a flash photo underwater of a squid, it's going to really damage it.
Wow. So. That is amazing. And because we're wired backward, as Dawkins says, which you're using the word arrogant, and I think that's an appropriate word because of the brilliance of the human form.
That's
the
right.
Human body. Mm-hmm. And all the doctors, there are MDs across this country. We've done this in our list of scholars doubting Darwin, where we show the research done by Harvard and these institutions that are anti-creation, pro-atheistic evolution, and they've asked PhDs and MDs, do you think God was involved in the origin of human beings? And it turns out that hundreds of thousands of them say yes, God was. And this is
after
a century of Darwinist propaganda in our schools.
Yeah.
And still they know when they look at the human form, God had to be involved.
Exactly.
You know, the old claim about vestigial organs. In fact, at the time of the Scopes monkey trial, and we have a friend of Real Science Radio, Fred Foote. Mm-hmm. He wrote and produced a film on the Scopes monkey trial called Alleged. It's got a lot of major Hollywood actors in it. It's just a phenomenally wonderful film.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the evolutionists had claimed that over 100 organs or glands in the human body were vestigial, that they had no function. They were leftover junk from evolution.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And today, all of that list has pretty much been tapered down to zero.
Virtually zero. Yes. They still put on that list a couple of things, like the appendix,
right,
which has now shown, even though it's in the textbooks, to be very useful.
Yeah.
It's a safe harbor for beneficial bacteria. Mm. And several papers recently on that says, you know, when you get violently sick, you really clean up out the entire system. Mm. Well, you lose a lot of beneficial bacteria when you do that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you need that in your gut and your intestinal system. And so the appendix is actually a safe harbor for those beneficial bacteria.
So that
bacteria.
Resupplies.
And it reboots the system.
Wow. That is really.
And the Chinese found a very important function for the wisdom teeth.
Mm.
Yeah, it's for chewing.
So, Dave, when we're told that all these organs and glands, and they were unnecessary, what happened was this was ignorance that seems to be an ally of Darwinism. Because Darwinism says, look at all this junk in the human body. It has no function. And I debated on this show on the origin of the eye, a professor of ophthalmology from the University of California.
Mm-hmm.
And what a half-hour show that was. And he was naming all these parts of the eye, the nictitating membrane, the lacrimal lake, whatever he was saying, the pleca, semilunar, whatever all these different parts were. And he's saying they have no function. They're leftover junk. And I look up on the world's leading authority on the anatomy of the eye, published in like the 8th edition. And there, for each of these parts of the eye, they mention their important functions.
Yeah.
Their vital functions for the proper functioning of the eye. And here's a professor of ophthalmology telling his students they have no function because he wants to find some evidence for Darwinism.
Exactly. And part of the worldview of evolution, of course, is there should be junk. There should be things left over that's absolutely worthless.
Right. Or and if not, most of the stuff should be junk.
And so immediately they look at something, they don't see the use of it right away, they'll consider it to be junk.
And so that's a science stopper because for generations, I mean, we lost about a half a century of study in opportunity in genetics.
Oh, yeah.
Because they thought that, what did they think about our DNA, our genome?
Well, with the genome, they thought a couple of things. They thought that a good share of our DNA was junk left over from millions of years of evolutionary development. And that's what it should be if evolution is true, they said.
Yeah.
So they've stated that in textbooks over and over again, something like 98% junk. Well, guess what? That turned out to be wrong. The latest research says junk DNA is not junk.
It's a misnomer.
There's a group of about 300 genetic researchers that looked into this idea of junk DNA, and they found out that it had an important function, sometimes in regulation, sometimes in repair, control of disease, etc. All very important functions. What they're finding out about, quote, junk DNA. The ENCODE project summed it up this way: this metaphor of junk isn't that useful anymore.
Wow. And in fact, there's been one famous evolutionist from the University of Chicago, Jerry Coyne, who said, if the ENCODE project is right, then Darwinism is wrong.
Well, that's a good point, isn't it?
That is a great point. And the ENCODE project is right. In fact, the head of it, and they published in the journal Nature,
yes,
the world's
did.
Leading, most
and
prestigious.
Many other publications,
yeah, and
too.
And many others. Mm-hmm. And like you said, hundreds of researchers working in labs around the world, and they're looking for function of the different parts of our DNA, and they said they have found the strong evidence of function for 80% so far, and they believe the head of the project said he believes it's going to approach 100% functional.
Yeah, that's because they only looked at certain numbers of cell types.
Oh, yeah.
But every time they looked at a new cell type, they found more function.
More function.
And so they figured once they start looking at other cell types, they're going to find additional function. So they're pretty well confident.
In the human body, there are hundreds, thousands of different cell types. Like, for example, photoreceptors in your retina, and red blood cells, and osteocytes in your bones, and you go on and on. Mm-hmm. And they have different functions they perform, and so they would use different parts of the DNA to perform those functions. And so when you look at a certain number of cells, you find that parts of the DNA are functional. Then you look at other cells, and you find out, well, these other parts of DNA are functional. And the fact that some parts of the DNA are functional in one cell type and not another is just more evidence of design and purpose and function.
It really is. And the closer we look at genetic research, at the cell, go delve deeply into it, even the nucleus of the cell, we're finding out it's more and more and more complex. And for instance, they used to talk about redundancy. How in the world, when you have a code for an amino acid, like glycine, you got four different combinations that produce the same thing called glycine, but they differ in a four-letter code with the last letter. Mm-hmm. And the last letter is the one that they say it's redundant. Forget it.
Right.
And that stops research. That stops research when you just
Whereas
say it's
junk.
Whereas
if they would have continued to look, what more might they have found?
They did find now. Frontiers in Genetics reported the use of that. They found out that that last letter controls the folding of the protein.
Dave, I had
it's because within a cell, you have this thing called the folding machine. Okay, and this protein, once it's been coated, goes into that thing, comes out bent into the perfect shape.
Into the shape it needs to perform its function.
Exactly, and that last letter controls the timing and the degree of the folding. So it's a dual coding system now, which defies evolution.
This is astounding because we had been told neo-Darwinism is it's all about the order of the genetic letters on your genome, your long DNA.
That's right.
Okay, but they're finding out that some of that DNA could be read not only forward the way they thought, but some of it could be read backwards.
Exactly.
Which is astounding beyond comprehension.
It's even better than that. According to Dr. John Sanford, when I was talking to him one day, he says...
He's a geneticist from Cornell.
He's one of the top genetic researchers
from
Cornell.
Professor Emeritus.
The one who was co-inventor of the gene gun, all this.
And
so he's
author of genetic entropy.
That's right. And 25 genetic patents under his belt.
So you were
time.
Talking to Dr. Sanford.
Yeah.
A little name-dropping here. Pretty wonderful that you are.
Oh, okay. But the interesting thing about that, he says, not only does it read backwards, but there are several connecting points. And if you start at those different connecting points, it's another
you make a different
set of instruction.
You make like a different protein.
Yeah, it's like an author who wrote a book that reads like a tremendous book when you read it frontwards up to the end, or you go backwards the other way, or you start at any one of the chapters, and it's a different
intriguing
novel.
It's a different story. Imagine a 10-chapter book, and if you start at chapter 3, and you read to the end, and then you begin at 1 and 2, and you get a different story.
Yeah, that's amazing what he was saying.
This is the
like.
Kind of, these analogies give you insight into the brilliance of the authorship of the human genome.
Exactly.
And not only the human, millions of species.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And all the kinds, and especially with microbes, single cellular organisms.
Exactly.
God's brilliance is beyond our understanding.
Oh, yes.
How he's able to do these things. But so you mentioned the folding. That's another part of the complexity.
Exactly.
We think about, well, it's the order of the genetic letters on the DNA that gives you the protein. And once you have the protein, and even though it's made with the same amino acids, if it folds a little differently, it does a different job.
Exactly.
It has a different importance. Mm-hmm. And then there's all the information outside of the DNA, all the epigenetic information that neo-Darwinism hasn't even begun to address.
That's right.
Their whole thing is mutations on the DNA. Well, how about all the information that's outside of the DNA? They haven't even addressed it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, let me make an analogy to cosmology. They say that they understand how the universe started with the Big Bang, mm-hmm. and Big Bang nucleosynthesis creates hydrogen and helium.
Sure.
Okay, well, they think to save the Big Bang, most of what's in the universe is dark energy and dark matter, which they have no idea what that stuff would be.
That's why they call it dark, because they can't see it. They can't detect it at this point.
And so the Big Bang, they have no explanation of how most of the stuff in the universe would have been formed in the Big Bang. The Big Bang nucleosynthesis doesn't address most of what they think must be in the universe, so they don't have a theory even of how the universe formed. They simply don't have a theory.
That's right. Exactly. And I think you addressed some of that in your new DVD, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks
the Big
for
Bang.
Mentioning that. Our Real Science Radio's Evidence Against the Big Bang, which we're so excited about.
Mm-hmm.
We have it, in fact, this past week in Denver, the annual Czech Conference, Christian Home Educators of Colorado. What a wonderful event. And you were there with Alpha Omega Institute.
Right.
And in fact, Dave, could I mention your Rock and River adventure?
Oh, please do.
Because our sons have gone on this. In fact, our younger son, I think, is going in July here, coming right up. And so this is now 3 years. Some of the Enyart boys will be on your Rock and River adventure.
That's great.
So could you tell us about that a bit? Because there's still room. Other folks could join.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah.
They can. This is an interesting adventure. It's different than a lot of our other tours and camps. But what we do is 5 nights camping along the river on one of the more fabulous whitewater rafting rivers in the country.
Mm.
And it's not a rapid, and then you get bored for an hour, then another rapid. This is rapid after rapid after rapid, which the teens and the adventurous adults enjoy.
Yeah.
And so we have that whitewater rafting that we do. We also do the rock climbing and even hiking to an alpine lake, and even further up, if somebody wants to try to summit to a peak, if the weather is permitting,
mm-hmm.
of course, we don't want anybody struck with lightning.
Yeah.
But anyhow, we are very careful on these things.
Mm-hmm.
So we do all this stuff. It is a wonderful adventure,
well,
but there's a reason.
I'd say the guides, like your rafting guides, these guys are pros.
Oh, yes, they are.
They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly. They know exactly what to do. And these guys are noted for specific safety. they have more instruction than a lot of people do, who are guides.
So you're saying...
And Christian, to boot.
Christian guides. So you're saying, but it's not just about getting up in the mountains and out in nature, and all that is so wonderful, just that. But it's not just about all that.
No, it isn't. That is a good draw. Let's put it that way. However, I just love it because I can do a lot of teaching on creation and to be able to talk to these teens and other people as well about the fact that, yeah, there is a creator God, and here are the evidences. So around the campfire, I might throw these questions. How do you answer Richard Dawkins when he says the eye is poorly designed? How do you answer Richard if they says you could choke to death? Okay, that kind of thing.
Well,
and I've let them grapple with an answer, and it's kind of fun to do that, get them to think how to respond,
of course, right?
And then go around and say, okay, how would you answer it? Would you answer it? But it's a lot of fun. So I teach in the morning, or we teach in the morning, and then also in the evening as well. It's a good learning experience.
And so the Rockin' River Adventure is, when does that start?
July 4th. At 10 o'clock, we start at Texas Creek.
July 4th.
Yeah, July 4th. 4th of July. That's on a Monday this year.
Okay.
And we go until Saturday. This is when they start heading out.
All right. And so where in Colorado do you meet?
We meet at Texas Creek, which is on the Arkansas River between Canyon City and Salida, Colorado.
Yeah.
And that's where we meet. And then we actually will raft several stretches of that river. And not just raft with a rubber raft, but there are times we're using rubber duckies, which are inflatable kayaks with, I know your sons love those things.
That's fun, too. So you get the rafting, and then you get the rubber duckies, which it's just so much fun.
And the rock climbing and the alpine hiking, all that kind of good stuff. And I like, for me, it's the teaching.
Yeah,
I like to be able to do the teaching and talk about it.
So what ages and what kind of physical shape does somebody have to be in to be on this particular adventure?
Well, first of all, ages, we usually say teen and or adventurous adult. But as far as your ability, you don't have to have a huge strength to be able to do this.
Right. Because even the hike, you said, some people might be, determined to go further.
Others, they don't have to go all the way. They can actually sit in the car if they want and wait for everybody if that's what they need to do.
Right, when you go to the trailhead.
Or stay in camp. That is a possibility. But, however, if it's one of our teens, we're going to encourage them to come with us. Or not encourage them.
If it's a teen.
We want them. It's an adult, that's
a
different situation.
An adult could stay back if they don't want to take the
There's virtually the hike. No teens that I know of that are not going to do as well as I do.
Okay. What a great point.
Right. And so I'm not worried about them making the hike.
All right. So that sounds good. And how do people find out more? If somebody's listening and they think, maybe my kid might go, it'd be fun for him to meet one of the NYARP boys.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Their friends and meet Dave Nutting. And will your wife be there?
Yeah, Mary Jo will be on this trip as well.
Mary Jo, because she's been a star of this
effort. She and I started this 30 years ago.
So let's talk about that in a moment. But how do they get more information?
Okay, you'll want to give us a call at our office because of the late date. Don't try to write us a letter.
Yeah.
You want to call us at our office at 970-523-9943.
Okay.
And that's the Alpha Omega Institute headquarters. They can go on the web for more information, too, and that's at discovercreation.org.
Okay, so discovercreation.org, and then there is...
Under camps and tours, they'll find the Rockin' River Adventure.
Camps and tours. And then the phone number is 970-523-9943.
That's right. And they can talk and go on the web. They can find out about not only the Rockin' River, but some of our other camps as well. Mm. They could get information on the family camp for virtually all ages. This summer, we're going to be doing one at Buena Vista, Colorado.
Oh, when
Beautiful,
is that?
Gorgeous camp.
Buena Vista's.
July 16 through 23. That's 7 days, 7 nights, 21 meals. And tremendous activities included with that one, too. Mm.
And when our sons and our sons who are now older, one has graduated, when they've gone for a week and they come back, we could see in their demeanor, their character, their growth, that this was an important part of their life, of mm-hmm. their childhood, even growing up into becoming a man.
Exactly.
It's one of those things that you'll remember throughout your life.
Right. We had somebody that came by the booth at CHEC. In fact, several people had been to our camps, okay? And I liked the one. In fact, I even videotaped him. He said that camp changed my life. Mm. And that was, he said it changed his life. He said it changed my wife's life and it changed my son's life.
Right.
We've never looked at the world the same since.
We're going to, you know, as parents, Cheryl and I have been very conscious throughout all these years mm-hmm. of raising sons that we'd love for them to have memories that they can cherish, memories that they enjoy, whether it is snowboarding or it's playing travel hockey or going rafting in the mountains.
Yeah.
But then especially when it's with friends and family and people who are honoring God, our Creator.
That's exactly right.
It
kind of share some of the same values.
So that's very important. All to the ultimate level, the mm-hmm. most important memories.
Exactly.
That someone could ever have. And so this is an opportunity to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have two events. We have the Rockin' River Adventure and the
Creation Mountain Adventure at Buena Vista. It's going to be held Spring Canyon this year.
The family camp.
Spring Canyon Conference Center.
Wow.
Wonderful lodge rooms. It's not like the Rockin' River where you're camping out in beautiful tents. These are beautiful lodge rooms with private baths and everything like that. So it's more of a posh type thing.
Yeah.
But we're, again, teaching and a lot of teaching on
creation. So I'm going to give the phone number again, and then I'd like to ask you about Mary Jo and how you guys ended up in this ministry, this outreach. The phone number, 970-523-9943. That's for Alpha Omega Institute, 970-523-9943. You guys are headquartered out west, right?
We're in Grand Junction, Colorado, but we go all over the country, different parts of the world. I think AOI has been in 31 countries now. And so, we go all over.
So how did you end up in this outreach?
We ended up, first of all, we started way back when I was a teacher and Mary Jo was both college instructors up in Alaska. We were believers of evolution. I was a staunch believer in evolution at that point. In fact, when I was in the fourth grade, I used to teach on a television program in Grand Junction how the study of rocks and fossils proved evolution.
In fourth grade?
That was a school project we were doing.
Oh, isn't that something?
And I was convinced of evolution because that's all I had ever heard. Mm. It was in my third year of teaching on the college level that Mary Jo, my wife, found an interesting book for 5 cents in a secondhand bookstore. Mm. And that was written by Dr. Duane Gish.
Oh,
and
my.
Evolution, the Fossils Say No.
Yeah.
And I first looked at the cover of that book. I said, this guy's got to be crazy. What do you mean the fossils say no? Mm. But the amazing miracle is Mary Jo did read it, and I read it.
Oh.
She's a biologist. I was more into geology and fossils, paleontology, et cetera, and I had a lot of other areas too. But the more I read it, the more I might say began to evolve into a creationist. All right? And I attribute the first thing to that book and Dr. Duane Gish. And I just determined I'm going to have to start doing my own research, my own study, not just accepting it because of what somebody else said. Mm. And that started my evolutionary process, you might say, tongue in cheek on that particular one. But so I ended up becoming a full-fledged creationist shortly thereafter.
Because of looking at the evidence, the same thing happened to me, although I was a lot younger and I was not at college. I wasn't teaching at the college level, but I was in high school. And by then, I had been convinced of evolution. I grew up Roman Catholic and went 8 years Catholic grammar school. And the Vatican says that Darwinism is true.
Oh, they support it.
And I just believed it. And I started reading the Bible, and I thought, wow, the Bible doesn't make it sound like evolution, but maybe it fits somehow. And then I started to hear scientists. I mean, Henry Morris had a majored chair at, I think, in Virginia, I forget which university.
Virginia Polytech, I think.
In hydraulics.
Yeah.
And
the University of Minnesota, too.
And these guys were making scientific arguments that challenged me. And I so quickly realized that I had believed a story that had virtually no scientific foundation.
Exactly.
And I reevaluated, and I, like you, but I did a 180. Mm-hmm. Like, I have been lied to. I've been misled.
Right.
And so,
I felt the same way. I felt cheated. And so did Mary Jo. But we were so relieved to see scientific evidence. In fact, you mentioned Henry Morris.
Yeah.
Shortly after reading the book, we actually corresponded with ICR and asked if there do they have any scientists that do presentations. And so we ended up bringing Henry M. Morris up to the college we were teaching at
in Alaska. Isn't that awesome?
That's right.
He must have loved going up there.
Oh, he said he had never been to Alaska before. Yeah. That's why he accepted this invitation for going to a small place like that.
Real Science Radio, we went on a cruise from Seattle, a science cruise with the Discovery Institute.
Yes,
and you know, they're old Earth anti-Darwinists.
Yeah, they're anti-Darwinist, and a good share of them might be old Earth. Some of them might be young Earth, but
some
at least they see the evidence
like
of design.
Paul Nelson, but yes, and we found out that we did our own informal survey of 100 people went on their cruise. At least half of them were young Earthers.
Okay,
and that was encouraging.
Yeah, that is encouraging.
Seeing that. But you know what? Almost none of them had heard about dinosaur soft tissue.
No,
and so
that's probably
that was our mission, to let all the old earthers know that dinosaur bones have red blood cells in them.
Yeah, and then that's what the opening on that DVD you mentioned there. That I gave, and I was a young person grinding and polishing on a lot of dinosaur bone and making a lot of jewelry out of some of this dinosaur bone. And occasionally I would cut into it, and I'd find all of a sudden a rotten egg smell. And I'm going, whoa, what is this? I never understood the significance of that because I was a staunch evolutionist at that point.
Yeah, because it should have all turned to stone. It should be permineralized. No biological material left.
That's right.
That's the way it should be.
But I didn't find out about that until much, much later because I was a staunch believer in evolution and I never thought about it. But there's no way that that soft tissue that was rotting right there and I'm smelling it could have remained a soft tissue and still decaying after 140 million years of history.
Yeah, right.
Then we have Mary Schweitzer and we have Jack Horner, of course,
up in Montana. And he helped make the Jurassic films. He was advisor on set of all four of them.
Yeah, okay. But Mary Schweitzer is working with Jack Horner, doing some thin section analyses, and realized, wait a minute, what is this? And he said, Jack, come over here. And basically, this is the story about it, but basically Mary Schweitzer is saying, what do you make of this, Jack? He said, I don't know, but I can tell you one thing. Those creationists are going to love you.
Oh, yeah, right.
Anyhow, but Mary Schweitzer actually discovered the soft tissue.
Yeah, blood vessels, blood cells, hemoglobin.
Yeah, and of course, might have a different explanation. They're not willing to give up the millions of years. They say, we still have to find a new way to explain how this happens, and we have to reevaluate our ideas on how bones are petrified.
Right.
Not the time frame. They're not willing to touch that.
Yeah, right, exactly. And Jack Horner then is known as for saying, oh, yeah, those bones, they all smell. Hell Creek. And because Mary Schweitzer had said, you know, these dinosaur bones, they sort of smell like the cadavers that we have in another lab.
Oh, my.
And I'm getting the same smell in our paleontology lab, which is just hysterical.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Everything screams that the Bible is true and God made us in the recent past. No matter where you look, whether it's paleontology or molecular biology or astronomy, it all says that there is no atheistic explanation. God made us.
Exactly. Well, let me just mention a couple other things here. We talk about our camps. We also do tours as well. And in the Grand Junction area, people can call us and get a tour of different areas there, the Dinosaur Museum. What about the Colorado National Monument? Mm. We actually take tours of the Southwest as well. We do a tour of Yellowstone National Park. We're going to do one over Labor Day weekend this year, September 2 through 6, that people can call and see if they can be part of. We have next March 2nd, we start a creation tour of Costa Rica.
Oh, my.
Which is on a lot of people's bucket list, but it'd be fun to go with people who of like mind.
Wow, a creation tour of Costa Rica.
Yeah, it's a, wow, I it's like a fun that. Thing. I've been to Costa Rica doing ministry at the University of Costa Rica a whole bunch of different times, and we decided, I think other people would love to see the same type of creation evidence that we've been seeing.
Wow.
We'll combine that with ministry outreach if people want to do that too.
Last science question, and then I know we have to close. So part of the argument that you might hear from an evolutionist is, well, humans are 99% similar to chimps. Right. When you look at our DNA, we're 99% the same. And I always thought, before I ever studied molecular biology, that, well, when I look at a chimp, I could see that there's a lot more than 1% difference. If DNA makes us, there's got to be way more than 1% different, because we are way more than 1% different. I mean, the human brain is the most complex arrangement of matter in the known universe.
Exactly.
And our abilities so far exceed those of a chimp. We study chimps. They don't study us.
Right.
And to think that it's all comes down to 1% difference is so juvenile, so superficial, so absurd. Well, but that's what they claim.
That's what they claim for years. It was in the textbooks. It was in the magazines, right front cover of science magazines. 98.6% similar, roughly, or 98.5%. But the problem is that was based upon the idea there was different parts of this DNA is actually similar to a chimpanzee. So when you compare the parts that are already similar, we might come up with a large figure of similarity of 98%. The problem is, what happens when you look at some of the other DNA and the rest of the genome? And
so in other words, they were thinking, well, this is all junk. We don't have to look at that. Let's look at these that are similar, like the genes for making collagen. Well, collagen. Of course, they're going to be sort of
similar. They're going to be very similar.
And they're going to be similar if it's a kangaroo or a human.
Exactly. It doesn't mean anything.
And even bananas and worms, it turns out that these fundamental building blocks, these proteins that get made by genes, there's tremendous similarity because God had a genetic toolbox he used to make. From these tools, I'm going to make all this diversity of life on Earth.
Exactly. That's exactly what he does. And, of course, you're going to have similarity. And like you said, we're 97.5% similar to a mouse using the same ideas. You're 92% similar to a zebrafish. And it is a whopping 50% similar to bananas. But now when you throw in the rest of the genome, that number goes down to somewhere around 86 to 89%. And then when you throw in all this stuff that's called junk DNA, which is not junk anymore, then that number goes down to about 71 to 72%, and that might even be conservative.
Well, you know, they must have ignored the Y chromosome because that's been published more recently, and they've sequenced the Y chromosome. The journal Nature has reported this. And you know how they described it? They said, this is a quote, that the Y chromosome from the chimp and the human, that they're horrendously different from each other.
Isn't
horrendously.
That amazing?
What kind of a scientific word is that? Horrendously different. They can't even line up huge portions of the genome. They're just completely different. So they must have just overlooked that with their 99%.
They must have. And sometimes it's our worldview that causes us to overlook those kind of details.
Yes, exactly. So, Dave Nutting, what an honor to have you in studio here at Real Science Radio. Yeah. We've been fans of yours for a long, long time, and especially since the NYARP boys started going on your Rock and River adventure. Mm. You've made a wonderful impact on our family and our children, which are our most precious resources.
Yeah, that's
more
exactly
than resources.
Right. That's right.
More than life itself. We love our children. Mm-hmm. And so you and your wife, Mary Jo, have had a huge impact. So thank you so much for that and for the influence you've had on thousands of other people that we'll never meet until we meet them in heaven.
Yeah, that's exciting to me. Yeah. Find out what the total accumulation is. But you know what? God is the one who does the changing of hearts.
Yeah.
You know, and
Amen.
He uses people like you.
Yeah.
And you do a wonderful ministry too.
Well,
you know.
Thank you. Dave and Mary Jo Nutting with Alpha Omega Institute and their website, discovercreation.org. The phone number, 970-523-9943. David, thank you so very much.
And thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to all these folks.
Well, you're very welcome. And this is Bob Benyard for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.